Good morning. It's Saturday the 11th of October. I'm Rob Watson, and today we're at the Saturday Heritage Fair in Leicester Adult Education on Beaver Street, and we're going to be bringing you for the next couple of hours some interviews and some stories from the Heritage Fair about why people collect heritage items and share stories by bringing the past to life and thinking about what we bequeath to the future. So we're going to, our community reporters, Roger and Arkesh, are out and about with their microphones. They're going to be talking to people who are exhibiting here, and we might have some conversations and discussions about what it means to belong here in Leicester and how we might think about developing and building more heritage material in the future. So sit back and relax, enjoy your cup of tea, and listen out for the stories that we're going to bring you.
Okay, this is Roger from Sursam Radio, and I'm interviewing...
Hi, I'm Colin Hyde, and I run the East Midlands Oral History Archive at the University of Leicester.
Okay, so tell me something about that.
Well, the Oral History Archive has been collected over the last 40 years, and it's got over 6,000 recordings in, mostly oral histories, which are people's memories that have been recorded. But we've also got local radio collections and music and wildlife as well. And I'm here at the Heritage Fair just to show off some of what we've got.
Right. And how far back does the recordings go then in history?
Well, the earliest recordings we've got don't date from before the Second World War, although obviously these things do exist because sound recording goes back to the 19th century. Our recordings date from the 1950s onwards, but the memories in them go back to the 1880s and the 1890s.
Wow. And in what format are these kept then? How do you keep all of the records now? Pause.
Well, on the table in front of me, we can see a wind-up gramophone player with an old shellac disc on it.
Yes.
I've got a reel... 78, yep. A reel of magnetic tape of the sort that we used in the 50s, 60s and 70s. And then I've got an old Sony cassette player.
Yes, it's all here.
It is. There's a mini disc player. I loved mini disc. A digital audio tape. Yes. Right up to a modern digital recorder of the sort that you're using to make this.
Yes.
And we deal with all of these because recordings come in all sorts of different formats, and there's still plenty out there that hasn't been digitized yet.
Okay. And if anyone wanted to get access to this or wanted to come in and ask you questions about this, how would they go about doing that?
Well, if people wanted to come and visit us, we're in the Archives and Special Collections, which is in the main library at the University of Leicester, and they can make an appointment. All of our material is on an online catalogue that you can find, but we've also got 700 oral history recordings online, which people can listen to. And to do that, you would search for the University of Leicester Special Collections online, and 700 oral history recordings and a huge amount of local history material. So if you're interested in the history of Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland, that is the place to go.
And is it just sound recordings that you've got, or you've got other kinds of archives there?
At the university, in Archives and Special Collections, there are all sorts of other things as well as sound. So photographs, local newspaper clippings, rare books and manuscripts, and actually objects as well. Yes. So it's a really diverse archive, a lot of which you can get an idea of if you go to the website.
That sounds fascinating. Thanks a lot for sharing that with me. So I'm with Jason from Vikings of Middle England. So, Jason, tell me something about what you do.
We're a Viking reenactment society. We have members that portray Vikings and Saxons from the Viking period, which was 793 to 1066. We have a combat side of the group, which do combat displays at reenactments. And we've got a lot of people who do living history stalls, like myself. I'm a blacksmith. So when I'm doing reenactment events, I take a forge with me, and I'll be making arrowheads and knife blades, that sort of thing. So just so that the public can see what the Vikings or the Saxons in the early medieval period, what they get it up to in history.
Okay, so Jason's got a fine attire on, which I won't even try to describe, but he's wearing a fine red tunic with a sword next to it, and what appears to be, well, a man purse, but obviously it's not, and a some very nice jewellery. So, Jason, describe a little... Oh, some very nice leather boots. So, Jason, tell me something about what it is that you're wearing, if you could.
I'm wearing a sort of clothing that was sort of based around a rich trader. So a lot of my stall, I've got it in front of us, is all trade goods which were around in the Viking period. So the main fabrics of the time is linen and wool. So I'm wearing a bright red tunic, which has been very expensive at the time. And it's embroidered as well. So it's the embroidery on the chest is, there's two images of blacksmiths. And what one's Regin, who was a blacksmith in a mythology. He made a sword for Sigurd, who's slain a dragon. And the other one is Wayland as well, which my forge is made out, named after. So that's Wayland.
And tell me something about the jewellery that's festooned around your neck. It also looks very finely made as well.
I've got a neck ring, which is twisted. Yes, I did, yeah. The originals are made out of silver, so a lot of wealth would be worn on you. So you could actually, when you're trading or buying anything, you have coinage, but it's mainly done on weight, so weight of bullion, of silver or gold. So if you wanted to, you could take my, I could take my neck ring off and actually buy something with that, or even cut it up, and they'll weigh it on a set of scales, and then you agree at the price on whatever you're buying, and then you could pay for it that way. So I've got a neck ring, also a chain with a Thor's hammer. Thor's hammer is called Mjolnir. So in the early days of the Viking period, with a pagan, a Thor's hammer was often worn around the neck or on other amulets. But by the year 1000, most of the Vikings were Christian. So then it went over to crosses. Mainly they became Christian because it's easier to trade with Europeans who were Christian. So it just made sense. Yes.
So, Jason, tell me, how did you get interested in all things Viking?
I started work as a farrier, so shoeing horses, and I did that for 17 years, and then decided that I wanted to do something different and become a blacksmith. And then this Viking group contacted me, wanted to know if I was interested in making anything Viking-related in ironwork, And I said, yes, I'll come down, and then I've been here ever since.
Right. So where's your forge then? Is it called a forge?
Yeah. Forge is at Foxton. I've got a workshop in Foxton, and I just make historical artefacts. So anything from cooking equipment, cauldrons, weapons for reenactors as well, and also things for museums and film and TV sometimes as well.
And these enactments, where do you do them, and how often do you do them, and do you teach at schools or other places some of the enactments that you do?
Some of the members do in-school teaching, but mainly we do once or twice a month during the summer. We'll camp out. We did one at Repton School, where the Vikings had their winter camps. We've done one there, and at Conkers as well, over in North Leicestershire.
Yes.
We tend to stay on site and then set up a Viking encampment.
Yes.
And then with various different tents with crafts going on, so woodworking, blacksmithing. We've got a coin strike, so you strike your own coin. And we've got a big cooking shelter, so we're cooking food during the day as well, and even cheese making.
So, okay. So are you a nearly a full-time Viking person? I hesitate to say this because I'm a bit scared, but is that what you do a lot of the time? Because you say you work in your forge making Viking jewellery and so on. Is that...
Not just Viking. I'm actually in two of the reenactment groups as well. I also do 18th century. So I'm chairman of Redcoats and Revolutionaries. We're a group mainly it was based on the 17th of Foot that later became the Leicestershire Regiment. Yes. And they were based out in America during the American War of Independence, and they were the heroes of Princeton. And also in that group we have I'm a sergeant in the 4th Battalion Royal Artillery, because I've made my own cannon. So I've got a cannon at home that I take to and do displays. And I also do, I'm in a Jacobite group, so I do called Lace Wars. So I'm always a Highlander as well in that. So it keeps me busy over the
summer. Been in films? I know you said you do TV.
I make film props for certain films, but also this year we did some filming with Dan Snow's History Hits regarding the American War of Independence. So that's just came out this month. So yeah, we're on that. So yeah.
So as far as the Vikings are concerned, if someone was interested in joining your group or being part of the enactment or actually seeing it, how could they get hold of you or the group?
Yeah, we're online on Facebook, and we meet every Wednesday in Braunston at a hall. So we do training, so we do combat training, because we have to keep up the skills to make it safe for when we're doing the reenactments in the summer. Also we have a non-combatant room where we sort of do crafts like sewing, spinning and weaving, that sort of thing. So, and that's every Wednesday of every week of the year. Yeah.
Well, Jason, you must have a very full life. I don't know what it is you might do when you're not doing all these enactments, but thanks for talking to us.
Hello, I'm with a gentleman whose Victorian attire is so compelling that I simply have to interview him. He'll introduce himself.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Arthur Wakeley.
Arthur, tell us a little bit about your attire from top to toe.
So, on my head, I have a velvet or felt-coated top hat, handmade, I might add, with a leather hat band to make sure that it stays snugly on my head. Beneath that, you have my long overcoat, which comes down at the front to my waist, and then at my back it comes right down to the middle of my legs, about to my knees. That coat has two pockets on the outside, and it has four buttons set in a square right in the middle of the coat.
Are you in morning attire?
I am in dress which would be suitable for the daytimes. So this would be morning, morning, but not morning as in commemorating someone who is dead. So no, it is not morning attire, but it is morning attire.
I understand. Thank you. Carry on with the description. You were last at your waist.
At my waist, I also have on a waistcoat which sits over my chest. This has five buttons down the middle. In line with the fashion at the time, popularised by the Prince of Wales at the time, this would be about 1900, I have my bottom button of my waistcoat undone.
That's very daring of you for the time. So this is the Edwardian period. So I believe that Edward VII reigned for about 9 years. I think he passed away in 1910.
Yes, something like that, yes. But, yeah, when he was prince, I think he'd popularised the bottom button being undone on his waistcoat. That was just purely because he was a big chap. Then I have trousers, which are also black. They are wool mix trousers, wool and cotton. They have tapes down the outside seams of the legs from the waist all the way down the outside of my legs to my ankles, indicating that they are quite posh trousers. And over all of this, well, with all of this, I'm carrying my silver-topped, black-painted cane.
That no self-respecting Victorian or Edwardian gentleman would be seen without.
Exactly right. It helps me walk places, but also, of course, it helps me protect the honour of a lady if she finds herself attacked.
So, Arthur Wakeley, some of our listeners may have heard of your name, but let's hear it from you yourself and tell us about yourself.
Yes, so the name Wakeley is famous in Leicester because I am an architect who designs buildings and makes sure that buildings get built properly. I am also the mayor of Leicester. When I become mayor, I am the youngest mayor of Leicester ever. I also sit on the planning committee for the city, and I am also a lay minister in the church, which means I can take services. But it also means that because I have come from a very Christian background and a Christian upbringing, and a modest Christian upbringing, a discipline of Christianity which emphasizes modesty and plain living, I am not ostentatious, and I believe in looking after the poor.
Which denomination? Is it the Church of England or a particular different denomination?
It is Protestant, which is the same side of the church as the Church of England, but I'm a Methodist, and specifically what's called a Wesleyan. So I think those terms would be good for our listeners to look up on the internet and discover more about Wesleyan or Methodist.
Thank you very much. Tell us about your connection, Arthur Wakeley, to Evington and North Evington.
Yeah, sure. So as Arthur Wakeley, I owned land and then developed land around what's now North Evington. So this is the area of town which goes from St Saviour's Road and Spinney Hill Park right out to Wakeley Road and the tall tower block at Falmouth Crescent, I think it is, and Crown Hills Community College. In fact, Crown Hills Community College is named, I think, after my house or the area of town, which was called Crown Hill. My big mansion that I ended up living in, because I did very well as an architect, was called Crown Hill. Now, at the same time as doing very well and having my big house myself, I did also build hundreds of houses around Leicester for the poor people and for people less well off than myself. There was a famous design of council house which local authorities built after the First World War, and it's called the Wakeley House, and it was famous for being very cheap to build but also very high quality accommodation. Thousands of them were built, not only in Leicester but also in places like Glasgow. So the design was borrowed by other cities. It was that successful a design.
Your surname is immortalised in Wakeley Road in Evington. Are any other members of your families remembered?
They are indeed, yes. Yeah. So I had four daughters. I had Gwendolyn, I had Margaret, I had Dorothy, and I can't remember the last one.
Was it Ethel?
Ethel, that's it. Thank you very much. Yes, there's four daughters, and they each got a street named after them. There is probably the most famous one is Gwendolyn Road. I hear Gwendolyn Road talked about a lot, mainly because there's a health centre on Gwendolyn Road. So lots of people know Gwendolyn Road, but then there's also Ethel Road, and that's a big street which runs a long, long way through North Evington and is an important arterial route for buses.
Indeed, and I drive down it every day on my way to work on the way from Evington. So do you know anything in particular about any of the daughters? Were they known in their own right, any of them?
For example, there's another house which was built for my eldest daughter, I think, for Gwendolyn, which was called High Cross, and that house had the facade of a building borrowed. So the facade of the building initially stood in High Cross Street, near where the High Cross Shopping Centre is in Leicester now. And we kind of borrowed that timber frame structure and took it to my daughter's house and built my daughter's house with it. The notable nature of my daughters is something I would need to research a little bit more. So I'm looking for the listeners to research the daughters of Arthur Wakeley and see what you can find out.
Yes, listeners to this podcast and readers of the Evington Echo, I know there are many interested and passionate researchers and lovers of local history amongst you, so please do get in touch with us, and we'll also put you in touch with Arthur Wakeley or his alter ego, which is...
Ken Ogbourne.
Now, Ken, tell me about yourself now. We've spoken about Arthur Wakeley. Now, tell me about the real... Who is the real Ken Ogbourne?
So, yes, I'm Ken Ogbourne. I'm an actor and voice artist based in Leicester. My real, real passion is to know everything there is to know about people. And what that means is that as an actor, I'm interested in investigating the people on the page. So recently I've been playing Macbeth in a Shakespeare play, and I was required to investigate Macbeth and who he is and what he is and why he does the things he does. But in the same vein, in real life, I am also passionately curious about people. And it's that which leads me to connect people together with the ideas they really, really need to know. Just as an example today, I've connected a photographer that I've just met today with a photography researcher that I've just met today. And I've connected them up so they're going to go off and do some work, hopefully together, about photography. It's that type of thing that I love.
That fits in with your description of yourself as a catalyst.
That's right. I am a catalyst. If you, listening to this podcast, are in the creative industries, I want you to reach out to me, Ken Ogbourne or Ken.Ogbourne on Instagram. Message me. Tell me whether you make poems or art or sculptures or paintings or comic books or theatre or film or anything you like to make. Message me about it and let's see if we can get you talking to other artists and creatives that can help you make more and better work.
Ken, if people are not au fait with Instagram, can you please tell us what your email address is?
Sure. So my email is Ken Ogbourne Actor. That's KenOgbourneActor@gmail.com.
You've spoken about having to research Macbeth. You might have referred to the Chronicles of Scotland or the Chronicles of Holinshed for that, possibly. One of the sources, but by no means the only of Shakespeare. So I'll leave that aside, but ask you a more general question about other historical personages that you have researched or played.
I did have a very fun day just a few weeks back at Northampton Film Festival. Yes, Northampton has a film festival. Look it up. I had to play a wizard. So I was dressed up in a wizard's robe and had a wizard's hat on and carried a wizard's staff. And I met children and families from all across Northamptonshire right there in the middle of Northampton at a day run by Northampton Film Festival. It was enormous fun. I didn't have to research spells, but I did research the history of Northampton. And we talked about the history of Northampton and the Great Fire of Northampton, which is an interesting topic.
Well, I look forward to meeting you in your incarnation as the wizard as well one day, and maybe interviewing you.
You shall not pass. Oh, maybe I won't get the role just yet.
Ken Ogbourne, alias Arthur Wakeley, alias Macbeth, alias the wizard. It's been great speaking to you. I think it's time for a photo now, don't you?
I would love a photo. Let's do that.
Hello, I'm with a lady I've just met who is going to explain to us why the story of Leicester would be incomplete without Elizabeth Hayrick.
Thank you. Elizabeth Hayrick was a passionate social justice campaigner, and she turned her attention to the abolition of slavery. She took this in two different directions. Firstly, she led a consumer boycott against slave-produced goods, where she went around knocking on people's doors, explaining why they shouldn't buy slave-produced sugar. And she also talked to grocers and stationers and confectioners to discourage them from using slave-produced sugar. She also took a financial side to her campaign in that she set up the Leicester Ladies Society to campaign against slavery, and she joined the Birmingham Ladies Society, where she became treasurer and encouraged them not to give any money to the male anti-slavery campaigners and societies because the male societies wanted to work towards a gradual abolition. Elizabeth insisted, no, we need to stop it immediately because it is totally unjust. We shouldn't let it continue.
It's astonishing why such an important abolitionist, reformer and campaigner such as Elizabeth Hayrick is not better known. Why do you think that is?
Partially because she was a woman and women's names have sort of been not included in history to the same extent as male names. Also, very little of her actually exists in Leicester anymore. Her childhood home is on the site of where is now the Holiday Inn on St Nicholas Circle. Her marital home, which was in the Foss Road North area, got torn down by the city in the 1960s, and she's in an unmarked grave at Welford Road Cemetery. So there's nowhere sort of physically in the city to attach a plaque or to remember her by, which is why we're doing two campaigns. One, to get educational materials together so that city children can learn about their own heroes and their own history, but also to put a statue up to her so that people can, you know, physically see her and remember her name.
So is there a fundraising campaign for the statue currently?
Yes, it's mostly online. We're asking people for donations towards it. I mean, we've only really got going since the last year, so we're still in the very early stages at the moment. So, but we have been in talks with the City Council, who are interested. So
that's great. I think more Leicester women need to be celebrated and remembered.
Absolutely. We technically only have two named statues of women in the city. One is Alice Hawkins, the suffragette, which everyone knows, and the other is the Anglo-Saxon Queen Ethelreda, which is in the Guildhall.
Now, the second one, can you tell us a little bit about that lady? I know you're here to talk about Elizabeth Hayrick, but can you just repeat the name of the woman who is commemorated in the Guildhall?
It's a difficult one to pronounce, but I think it's Queen Ethelreda. She was just one of the Anglo-Saxon queens, and there was a statue to her in the city centre, which got destroyed. So they made a small copy of it, which is in the Guildhall Square.
Thank you very much. I will look out for that. Is there anything else that we should know about Elizabeth Hayrick, or perhaps you could talk about your educational work in schools?
Yeah, we're here today to just raise the profile of Elizabeth Hayrick herself and to introduce her to people, reintroduce her really to people, because people don't really know who she is or what she stood for or what she managed to achieve.
I wonder if there's a road named after it. Is that a Hayrick Road, or am I imagining that? Have you heard of that?
There is an Elizabeth Hayrick Drive in Scraptoft. So she does have a road named after her.
So, yes, so Scraptop obviously is our neighbouring village in Ebbington. And I'm sure our listeners will be very happy to find out more about the Elizabeth Hayrick Society. And is there an email or a contact that they could go to, please, if you could tell our listeners?
Yes, there is a website, www.elizabethhayrick.org, but I'm sure if you just put Elizabeth Hayrick Society in a search engine, you'll find us.
So, Emily, it's been a pleasure to speak to you about Elizabeth Hayrick. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm with John Costa, who is the organiser of this seventh annual Heritage Day at the Adult Ed in Leicester in Belvoir Street. So, John, could you say something about the day and how you organise it and why you've organised it?
Sure, yeah. It's number nine, so I feel even more tired than seven. I was fresh, but now I feel older. But yeah, it's the ninth one. I really enjoy doing these kind of things because I think it's a real opportunity to get people to come together who are interested in heritage, but also it's specifically designed for people to bring along things that they've inherited or have been given, or they've purchased, found through house clearance, been into a jumble sale, been given a box because someone in their family thinks they're going to be interested. And they've got this item, and they can probably find it online, possibly how much it costs to sell on eBay, but they really want to know, why is it in their family? What's the connection? So it started really from working with the Family History Society to be able to provide this service where people could bring things in, talk to people. Then we partnered with MACE, the Media Archive of Central England, looking for people's film if they've got anything. And it's kind of grown from there really to have a real eclectic mix of, you know, synthesizer music. It's got, you know, organizations because it's Black History Month. We've got both universities represented, one doing research, the other with their heritage hub. And it's great to be able to talk to all of these people and just sit and listen sometimes to the conversations that they're having about projects they're working on, and then suddenly realising they can help each other. It's that kind of I think sometimes heritage organisations do their thing, but they forget about they could be doing their thing with other people.
So I'm hearing a lot of stories here today. So what's your story? But how did you come to get involved in this and set it up 9 years ago?
Well, I think my mamma was a real kind of, you know, my mum's mum was always a really big influence on me about, you know, kings and queens, history, the world, being in the army in World War II. And I ended up in the army for a while, and I've worked all over the world. I work quite a lot in Nigeria at the moment. And I've always been interested in stories. So I ran an organisation in Leicester called Citizens Eye from 2008 to 2014. And that was all about community news, community development, which is how I met Rob Watson and why we won the Spotlight on Heritage and Spotlight on Arts podcasts. And then when that finished in 2014, I set up something called the Documentary Media Centre, which is basically how do we use documentary media, which is like film, photography, audio, new media, so websites, but also that an old film can be digitised and now available as a new media on, say, YouTube. How can we put that together with solutions journalism in order to put on events about stories, but real authentic stories of people, places and events? And the opportunity came up to be able to use the adult education building here, Handsome Hall, which is 180 years old this year. And so it just kind of went from there, you know.
So there's a lot of stalls here. How did you get them all together? Did you just put out an advert for them?
No, I know all these people. I've done something with them. They've either been featured in my newspapers or I've reported on them. I've kind of networked with them. I know them as friends. Many of them I know as friends. And then a couple of people for the first time this time got in touch and just said, "Oh, look, you know, we'd really like to come and get involved in the fair. We'd heard about it. Someone recommended it." And it all bodes well for the 10th one next October. So the 10th one on the 10th of October next year, 10-10-10. I have to do it now because it's far too catchy to let it go.
So I see here an array of newspapers, which are they all your works, John?
Yes, so this one here, the Y Heritage newspaper, we were commissioned to do that during COVID. It was a lottery project that was run by Leicestershire YMCA. And obviously we've gone into lockdown and they were looking for digital solutions for people to be able to do things. So we came up with this newspaper and giving items in museums digital personas, bringing them alive. And once we'd done that newspaper, we then spoke to the city council and we produced two newspapers, two copies of the Has We Got News For You, which was about the Heritage Action Zone, Granby Street and Churchgate. So there were two issues of that. And then we've recently just done the 30th anniversary of the Bridge, the Homelessness Project in Loughborough. And we're about to launch our own newspaper as well called On Heritage in March next year.
And is there a website for all the different groups that there are here today, or is there somewhere being able to collate some of the stalls or information here? Because there's such a lot here and it could be of interest to lots of different people.
Yeah, well, everyone here today is listed in the Saturday Heritage Fair blog post. So I'll be amending that at the end of today to reflect on what's happened, some photographs. And on there is a link to every organisation that is here and down in the basement and out in the cafe area.
Okay, thank you for that. I'm sure lots of people here are really grateful for you bringing everybody together. And thanks for speaking to us.
Thank you very much.
Hello, I'm delighted to be with Nigel Wood, who's from the very impressive and erudite-sounding Literary and Philosophical Society. We hope to find out more about the history of this society and its current work as well. So, Nigel, over to you.
Okay. Well, the society was founded in 1835. And that is quite an important date. 1832 was the Great Chartism Act. And there was a lot of, especially up at Victoria Park, as then was, a great deal of fights in the park itself, the open ground. And the idea was that the society would bring the dissension and the debates into a sort of a neutral arena. So the society started, and it first was one of the main funders and brought people together to fund the university. And indeed, the main library was in fact a legacy with the museum of the Literary and Philosophical Society's activities. And it survives well today. It survived lockdown, it survived the COVID, and we now have a membership around about 260. Not all attend every week, but in the months from autumn into spring, we usually have a lecture every, with a gap for Christmas, we and other festivities, we usually managed to get a lecture every other week on a Monday evening. And it's open, despite what the, you know, the title is, literary and philosophical. There are loads of different disciplines that should interest anybody who comes along. We've got a very strong list on conservation, on ecological matters. And we would welcome people who want to turn up, you know, and participate. And questions and answers for the lecturers are available immediately after the talk. There are refreshments beforehand. So it's a good social event. This isn't just erudite, you know.
Sure, so food for the mind and also a social event, as you say. So you mentioned the University of Leicester. Can you tell us about some interesting patrons that our listeners may have heard of?
Well, the life patron is David Attenborough, but the Attenborough family actually sponsor an annual lecture. The Royal Society of Chemistry also sponsor an annual lecture, and there are other sponsored lectures by the each one of the Leicestershire universities sponsor their own lecture as well. So that's aside from Leicester University themselves. Leicester University obviously specialise in areas that they are noted for, like space exploration. And increasingly, oral history is also a big component of Leicester University itself's component. And they offer a range of potential speakers. The Vice Chancellor's got in touch with, and we ask them, him in this case, to sort of suggest speakers, and they help us corral together a nest of speakers for the society itself.
I'm hoping to speak to Colin Hyde, who is from the Leicester Oral History Archive. Yeah. Has he ever spoken there? And
no, not yet. I mean, one of the big things about this Heritage Hub meeting here at the Adult Education Centre is that we're able suddenly to reach out to prospective speakers who would like to come to the literary and philosophical, either as members or as lecturers. And I was very interested in the group from Serendipity, representing Black History and Black History Month. And what we're striving for is to make sure that the communities that make up Leicester as a distinctive city get an airing in the literary and philosophical society itself. So we've got a lecture which is upcoming about to celebrate Black History Month about art by black painters. That's come from the deputy director of the Courtauld Institute. And I just get the feeling that, you know, unless you try and embrace multiculturalism, it always seems to eventually get a bad press sometimes in the political sphere. Yeah. And I think Leicester is such a success at blending together different kind of communities. And it's Leicester Lit and Phil is one of the hubs that celebrates that, I think.
See, yeah. I think academic field and intellectualism doesn't really have any cultural boundaries. It's something that's global. Thought and intelligence and rationale, they're universal, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. And therefore, there's so much to learn about different cultures. I mean, for example, even white culture is not universally known about. And so, therefore, but certainly, except when it comes up to Diwali and Navrati and so on, there tends to be things that our sons and daughters learn about at school that actually the parents don't know a lot about. And so there is a sense, it's educational, but it's also celebratory, and I think that's important. It isn't just educational and fill out this questionnaire or something like that. It's also something that actually celebrates what lies behind the festivals as well.
So if I may turn it a little bit towards myself, because I think it's relevant, and yeah. I'm not going to make this interview all about myself, but just to give you some background, I was brought up in a family which on my mother's side were Hindu, on my father's Sikh, but my parents made a very strong early decision to bring us up in a secular, free-thinking household.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my parents decided, well, let them discover in this city of Leicester about different faiths, about alternative viewpoints such as humanism yeah. and secularism, yeah. and let them decide to choose something to follow yeah. or to be influenced by a concept yeah. Or a philosophy. And I have to say, I'm very, very grateful to my parents
yeah.
that I wasn't brought up in any straitjacket of yeah. faith, if I may put that yeah. respectfully, yeah. is that it gave me a broader horizon. It allowed me to ask questions about people that were very different from me
yeah.
and to actually get to know people and different representatives of culture on an individual basis
yeah.
Through personal experience. So what, yeah. What do you have to say about that, Nigel?
Well, I think the famous 18th century essayist Samuel Johnson said, "How can you be proud of something you've not chosen?" In other words, the choice and the motive behind the choice that's free is the thing of which you should be proud. The kind of stuff that you simply float into because of heritage and history might be understandable, and you might be able to comprehend it better by stepping aside from it a little. So you understand why it is that your parents believed a certain thing, or grandparents, and what lies behind the choice that's available to you. So I think that the humanist element is has always been open, as certain forms of religion has always been open to free debate. And I think that the Leicester Literary and Philosophical Society prides itself on that. We don't usually, if at all, actually encourage speakers to come who have a part of political axe to grind. They may have some political views, but it's not part of political. So it's a kind of open space for free debate and free conversation. Conversation is important.
Yes, there's a maxim in, I think it's in journalism, but certainly in community reporting, yeah. which I'm what involved in, which is never leave a good conversation in the room.
Yeah.
That's probably a good place to end, Nigel, unless you have something else to add.
No, just to say that we would welcome new members. You can join via Zoom. If you can't regularly make it to, at the moment, to Handsome Hall, where we have our... when the new museum and art gallery is refurbished, we'll move there for our lectures. But, I mean, just do get in touch with us. There's a website, dedicated website, which will give you all the information that you need. And we'd welcome you along, as we do.
Thank you, Nigel Wood from the Literary and Philosophical Society.
So I'm with Sajan from Satsang Radio. So, hello, Sajan. Could you tell me something about your radio station? It's based in Leicester, yes?
Yes. We're based in Leicester in Pupil Centre, Orchester Avenue, Leicester. Not far from here. And we are the Hindu Sanskar Radio Original Charity.
Yes.
And that charity presents the Satsang Radio. And the charity is established in 2004.
Okay.
And even with the Satsang Radio, it's 100% charity. All the presenters are volunteers. Everybody who does any work, it's all the volunteers' work. So it's like a money coming from community going back to the community. We don't spend any penny anywhere else but the Satsang Radio, and all the money stays into Hindu Sanskar Charity, and we make sure that every penny goes towards the community.
Okay, so say something about the contents of the radio. So what kind of things do you have on the radio? I'm assuming you have some music and then some talk, I assume, yeah?
Each presenters are different. For example, yes. Me, when I'm doing my shows every day, Monday to Thursday, 10 till 1. So I have my format, and if, for example, Shanti does the weekend, so she's got her format. So my format, I'll tell you, then Shanti will tell her format. In my 3 hours, the first hour is like goes through with the aarti and prayers. Aarti is the when you have a beautiful decorated thali.
Yes.
And then when we're in the temple, we light the divas and yes. do the aarti. So I start my program at 10, and then I introduction, and then I say what kind of materials we'll be playing today, what we're going to do in the Rasola Nudava Kanu, meaning the your kitchen, health in your kitchen, health is in your hand, all our masalas. You know what masala is, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. They all in their own have a medicine purpose
yes.
on it, like turmeric
yeah, yeah.
and cumin. Every masala is different,
yes.
and every masala's got their good things on it.
Yes.
So my program is 10:30 is aarti. Then I play various music according to the day.
Yes.
So Monday it's more Shivji's bhajans. Then when it's Tuesday, it's all more Shakti's and Mataji's bhajans and the aarti according to that. And then 11:15, between 11:15 and 11:30, I have a Rasolanu Dawakhanu where we talk about the Ayurveda. And you don't have to go and buy anything different from anywhere else. It's all in our kitchen. Rasodu meaning kitchen.
Right.
So everything what we need for Ayurveda, it's in our kitchen.
Yes.
So I talk about that. Then people rings and say, oh, I do this, and this work that way. So then we put that on there saying, look, that worked for me this way, but for Shanti, it worked differently.
Yes.
And for Rob, it worked differently. So for different people, different masalas work differently.
Yes.
So we do that about 11:15. Then about 12:30, I take all the messages. We have our telephone messages.
People call you.
Oh, loads of people call us. Especially our elderly people
yes.
who can't come out of the house,
of
who's bed bound or heart bound. They think each and every one of us, because they got nobody else to talk
yes.
to. So they'll like ring Shanti in the morning, then ring me in mid-morning, then ring Aarti in mid-afternoon, then ring Dhruvi in the evening. So they speak to everyone.
So it's like a little social services. All these people are being invited into people's front rooms or bedrooms or wherever they're sitting in their homes. That's a nice story.
It is. And we have our own WhatsApp group for our listeners.
Yes.
Yeah. And like today's program, when we put, we're going to be there. So the message came straight away. Where is this place? What's happening? So then I got back to them and say, we're here on Wellington Street
yes.
at the Adult Education Leicester, and this is happening. I said, oh, that's good, we'll be there. So
yes.
so that came from the group. Then we have our own Facebook accounts, then Instagram accounts. So we have about 3,000 followers there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you said that you sometimes play, is it different music on different days?
Yeah.
So is that like the idea of playing different ragas at different times of the day to suit
yeah.
moods or
yeah.
so on?
So when I start with like soothing music.
Yes.
Then gradually we just get into the folk songs, and when there's folk songs, it's a dole playing, and it's a bit heavy, like a heavy metal.
Yes.
So people start warming up to it. And different days we have a different worship, different gods, and all the different gods and goddesses' music's a bit different as well, so it gives you variation.
Yes.
You're not playing the same kind of music, or like the same layout of music,
yes.
same beats music. So it's each day we play out a different kind of music.
Yes.
So you never get bored thinking, oh, I heard this yesterday.
Yes.
It doesn't
yes.
come like that at all. Different days got a different genre of music,
yes.
different kind of singers' music. And if it's rainy, then we play music according to rain. If it's too hot, then the music is like according to the hot countries.
Yes, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I have a friend called John, who is a Malaysian Indian man, and he played sitar at my wedding. And he told me that he mistakenly played the wrong raga at the preparation of someone's wedding, and the music was too exciting, and he had to stop because the guests were getting a bit overstimulated.
Yeah, that's true as well. That's why our ancestors, they were very clever ancestors, yes. We are ancestors. All the masalas, they prepared in such a way,
yes,
that each masala's got a value. None of them are high up there, but each one of them got their own thing. Yes. Same thing with the music as well.
Yes.
They've established six ragas, and then all the ragas derived from them. So it's going back thousands and thousands of years. And all the instruments as well, like we had, we start from the little ones, like a triangle, or a little chimes, or yes, little bells. And then it goes into like a huge drums, the drums that bigger than this. And 10 people could be playing on it. Same beats coming, not a second out of tune. So it's all been organized. And we're so lucky that we got this in our culture. We're not doing anything new, none of us. It's all there, it's given it to us.
Yes.
And we just giving back to the people in a better way of listening, because we got so many devices and we got so many instruments now, so it sounds even more better than what we used to have. But still, I think old is a gold.
Yes.
You can't beat it at all. Only 7 notes, and the music you can create from those 7 notes.
Yes.
Sajan, are you a musician? Do you play? What do you play?
I used to do the Bollywood when I was younger.
Yes.
Then I went towards the bhajan.
You a playback singer?
I could be, yeah. One of my CDs there. So
you were.
Yeah. So then, as I grown older, my way of thinking changed a little bit. My way of listening to the different music changed a little bit, because, and then Bollywood, they don't make the music the way they used to make it. It's all like mumbled up, and it's not something that I like it anymore. So then I went towards devotional music and folk music, and I just love it.
So
yeah.
We've got our own Latif Mangeshkar here in Leicester.
Ocean in, yeah, drop in the ocean, but I worship her. I still worship her. I can't believe that she's gone. So
auntie,
I went.
Did they call her auntie?
I call her Didi, meaning older sister.
Okay.
Yeah, and even now I can't bear to say Swargiya, meaning dead Lata Mangeshkar. I would say we have given her so many different names. So I said, even I can't pronounce to say Swargiya. So I just think she's still with us.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Sajan, tell me, how did you start to do radio?
Oh, I did radio back home, because I used to sing back home as well, and they used to have a local radio. So I used to go on it now and then for interviews and things.
Yes.
So then I started doing presenting a little bit there. But then I got married and came here in 72. So at that time, we didn't have any Asian radios or anything. But then we started like Diwali FM and the one-month radio station, and I started working in there.
Yes.
And then it's just, then people, you get to know the people, and then we established the Hindu Sanskar Radio Charity in 2004, and we started the radio then. And when we started, it was 3 presenters, myself, and Prem Bhai, who was the person who started, and another lady. So we used to do the joint program. And do you know how many listeners we used to have? 2. And then we used to say, yeah. Then we said, well, at least 2 people are listening. And then people started joining, and went into the thousands.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's how I got into the radio. Through my singing, I went into the radio.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm enjoying it so much. so many people. We're making so many people's lives very happy, very enjoyable. And they even ring us and say, we don't know what we'd have done during the COVID if your radio wasn't here.
So yeah. It's a sort of mutual support. You get something out of it, and everybody yeah. listens gets something out of it.
And we, like myself and Santi, we started thinking, at least we're doing 3 hours satsang. Sat meaning true, sang meaning together. So now we're doing satsang, meaning 3 of us together, 3 good people together, and utilizing their time to devote themselves to God.
Give it to positivity.
Give it positivity, yeah.
Society.
So,
because so many elderly people lonely in their house, and they don't have any people to talk to them. And now we started this satsang radio, so through that we can talk to them, they can talk to us, they share their views and opinion. Yeah, sometimes they just randomly speak about their families and their olden days and stuff like that. So it's like in the UK, we are just most of the old elderly people lonely in the house because youngsters are all there busy with their works and stuff like that. So this is the platform where we provide their nice divinity, positivity, something new, talk to them, sharing our information and stuff like that. We just represent our music, culture, and all the religious stuff. Also, we're socializing on other events and stuff like that. We give them information. Even some people, they're blind or they're deaf or they can't, and then we can provide their dates. Even they don't know the dates, what date is today. And they're just happy to see the God today, this day, this type of weather is today, and stuff like this. So it's quite like, you can say, yeah, socializing, a social service type of things. And it's completely non-profitable and a charitable box. And all presenters give their volunteer and their time to these people. So, yeah, so we all enjoy because good work always pays us as a happiness and, so inner peace.
You know, even they go to happy events happening, they laughing and
talking. Yeah, yeah, sometimes.
And sometimes if they're sad, they even cry.
Yeah, even they cry. Oh, yeah, happening. Yeah. So they're, sometimes they're sharing their views and stuff like that. The information also they're sharing with us. And yeah, so.
So people ring in, do they, and ask questions? So you are speaking to people as well as talking to them indirectly. You're talking to them directly.
We're talking to them on the satsang radio, but yes. they ring us, don't they?
They ring us in the studio.
In the studio, and we
provide some who can write and read. They can just WhatsApp messages in the every morning.
Yes.
Yeah, they share their. Can you? They share this my message to the public and say Jai Shri Krishna to everyone behalf of us. So yeah, we pass this message on the air, and yeah, they're enjoying. Yeah,
and the people who's not able to send the messages, text messages, yeah. they ring us on a studio on landline on telephone, and we put them on a speakerphone, and while we're doing our stuff, we speak to them, yes. and they open up so much. It's like become like a family.
Yes.
Some listeners, if they're not rang for 2 or 3 days, we will talk among us and say, oh, Shanti, so that person not rang me for 3 days. I hope that person is okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then Shanti will say, yeah, that's true, not rang me in my programs. So let's find out. And we ring them back. Or we say it on the air sometimes. We've not heard from you. Where are you? Are you going on holiday?
Yes.
And if they had went on a holiday, but they tell us that we're going away, so you will not hear from me for about 2 or 3 weeks. But if they've not done that, we announce it on the air, don't we? And we say, this person and that person's not rang me for 3 days. Everything's okay. Please ring me. Can we do it? Can we help you in any way? So it's like, you're sitting in the same room. That's how it
yes.
feels.
So where's your studio?
Oh, it's at the Pupil Center, Orchardson Avenue, Leicester, LE4.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, just about a few minutes from here.
Yes.
Yeah, and we're right in the heart of the city.
I'd like to come the and Belgium. Visit.
Yeah, we love to have you, won't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, we do come and we'll take a little bit of interview on it. Yeah, that'll be nice.
I'd like to.
Yeah. So from our building, we can see all the Belgrave's light now, Diwali lights. That's how close we are to the to the family, so they can come and see us. They come and visit us, bring the mithais, and mithai meaning sweets, you know what I mean, and brings us the Diwali cards. It's just like a huge family.
Sometimes they happy occasion in their family, or sometimes they said occasion in their family, like their death anniversary, something like that. They sponsor that day to us on the radio, so we can announce, and the whole day's program or just one scheduled program, they dedicated to their family members or something like that. Yes. Yeah, so and that way also they feel happiness, or we do something, because in our Hindu community we do bhajans and everything. We have, if somebody passed away, and they call all the family get together and do some bhajans and stuff like that. But nowadays after COVID it's really hard to get together all the family members in, because they, sometimes they live in a different countries and stuff like that. So this is a very good platform for them. Sponsor one whole day, and they just give a pass message to all their family members all over the world, so they can listen even online their whole day's programs, and they're dedicated.
The Hindu diaspora listen
all around the world.
We have listeners in India, America, Canada, South Africa, East Africa, Australia, all the Austral Islands, Middle East, everywhere. We get phone calls.
As far as they got internet.
As long as they got internet.
I'm jealous and impressed. Yeah.
And like Shanti just mentioned, thank you for reminding me, the sponsorship is our main source of income.
Yes.
For whole day, we only charge £90. And we announce it every hour. And for half day, it's only £45. But then it's affordable for everyone, because most of our listeners are pensioners.
Yes.
So that's, and then even for the advertise, we don't charge as like a commercial radio does.
Mm-hmm.
We only charge minimal charges. So
yes,
it's affordable for all the small businesses as well.
Yes.
So that's our, and donations are our main source of income.
Yes.
Donations, sponsorship, and their business advertising.
So if people are listening to this and want to donate or want to get in touch with you, or even just to listen to you, can you tell us how they would do that?
Our WhatsApp number is in here, because I remember the landline by heart. Avigyu. So our landline is 0116, which is the area code for Leicester. And if you're ringing from phone, then you have to have that. And then it's 2985.
Okay.
Can you remember it now, straight away? Yeah.
Yes.
2985, and then the mobile number is 07591147111. So we got five ones in it. So that makes us Satsang Radio number one. That's what we say.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Sajan, and thank you. Sorry, I don't know.
Thanks,
Shani. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Hello, Rob Watson here, and I'm at the Saturday Heritage Fair on the 11th of October in the Adult Education Centre here in Leicester. And we've been talking to people today about why they're at the Heritage Fair. And now I'm joined to two people whose names I've not yet had the chance to kind of recall. So do you want to introduce yourself first, and then we'll find out what you're doing and why you're here? So you're...
My name's Tiana. You can nickname me T. Quite cool with that nickname.
I can remember that one. Yes,
T, yeah.
I can remember that. And you're...
Daria.
And any nickname, just Daria?
Yeah, just Daria.
That's great. Okay, so tell us what's your main area of interest, and what's brought you to the Heritage Fair today?
Well, my interests are really, really broad. So everything from dance, psychology, health, arts, business, acting. I've got a really broad range of interests, and I'm very open-minded. So I'm always interested in expanding my interests. I'm currently in the process of setting up a creative arts and dance business, and I'm always wanting to develop myself artistically and professionally to expand my horizons within that work as well.
Cool. Daria, what about you?
My main interest is art history, because I did art history at university, and I'm from Kazakhstan. And I write and probably explore the art of Central Asia, and I try to write and give kind of a focusing it to the Western audiences. And I saw the Heritage Fair and I was just very interested in how they portrayed different types of heritages and different type of different cultures and our historical backgrounds. So that was very close to my theme as well.
And you come up from London today?
Exactly.
Specifically for this?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's great. And so you don't know Leicester very well?
No, I don't.
Okay, so you know Leicester better
too?
Explain a little bit of what the cultural mix of Leicester is like at the moment. How would you describe it?
I think that Leicester's quite culturally versatile. I think that there's a really good demographic of Black, white, Asian, Muslim, Chinese people in Leicester. It's interesting though, because in the dance world, I don't see it as much. I feel like the Midlands dance community probably, I don't see as many Black dance artists in the contemporary dance industry as I do, say, in hip-hop, African dance, jazz. I don't see as many Black dancers in ballet or in contemporary, which is quite interesting because I've done all the different styles. So, you kind of notice those patterns of the types of cultural backgrounds that show up in different dance forms. But I think in terms of Leicester in general, outside the dance world, I think it's really, really diverse culturally.
So tell us about the Silk Road project that you do, Daria, which is, and how does that fit in a broader kind of cultural mix?
Well, I initiated this project around 3 months ago and I started it on Instagram, where I write and probably publish artworks from Central Asian artists, and I try to spotlight those artists to the Western audiences. And I feel like my main objective is try to decenter art from like the Western canon and show the audience that art can be different and it can be seen from different backgrounds, from different perspectives, from different nationalities and cultures. And yeah, I think that's really important.
One of the things I'm interested in, and I run a project called Radio Layout, which is early stages. We've managed to launch it on DAB as an art-based radio station. And at the moment, it's full of a lot of AI-generated stuff because can't afford to pay the PRS fees. So I want to try and get artists coming in to do stuff. And what I'm interested in, it's called Leicester Emergent Arts Radio. And what I'm interested in is I appreciate the heritage and the history of art, but I also want to know what's coming next and how do we make sense of things and what is going to come out of this mix. So between the two, one with dance, one with visual arts, how would you you get the opportunity to think about this in terms of how this fits with the future of understanding creativity and arts and things? Or is it something that you think, you know, is it purely a kind of heritage attitude?
No, definitely. It's not only about heritage. I think it's mostly about rewriting this heritage and rewriting these histories and trying to find new perspective on what happened and try to reimagine and build something new.
What's that new thing for you? What's that new thing? I'm not saying that you have a fully formed idea, because who does?
Yeah.
But what is that new thing that you think we're edging towards?
Well, I think we're just edging towards new types of media and new types of art medium and art, like the ways we produce art. I don't know exactly what it's going to be like at the moment, but definitely we're going to look like a different emergent artist and emergent techniques and how artists, for example, I see it in many Central Asian practices, how artists use histories and then use AI. And they try to kind of rewrite it with the use of AI and construct a different artwork through that. So I think that's going to be the main process.
Now, I think there's a link here.
No, I was thinking the exact same thing.
Yeah. Do you want to just explain a bit about your photography?
Yeah, so at the moment I'm running a project. It's called Create and Capture. It's been partly funded by the Crucible, which is a business course over at De Montfort University's Innovation Centre. It runs across 4 days, and each day has got a different artistic theme. and day three's on the 24th of October, so not too far away. And I've been working with an amazing dance photographer, his name's Drew Davis, and a group of professional dancers. So it's just been really fun for me to express my creativity with different set, props, production, costume. I tend to have an artistic vision in my head that's very clear, and I kind of pull all the pieces together to make it happen. But it's really interesting that you've got background in art, because some of the ideas I've got for future dance pieces, I can see actual artwork being part of the set. So for example, I've got a really interesting idea of using certain cultures to do with Greek culture, Greek goddesses, different dance pioneers, Martha Graham, to inspire movement ideas. And I want to have artwork of some of these different pioneers and these Greek goddesses in the background as part of the set whilst they're dancing. So, and I was actually thinking for that I would probably apply for funding to pay artists to make the art for that, because obviously we wouldn't have the copyright rights to just take other people's art off the internet, so we'd have to get people to make our art for us. So there's always that, there's always crossover, there's always ways that different art forms can borrow from each other. And,
is yours originated work, or is it you what, just describe your project a little bit, because I know nothing about it, unfortunately. We've only just met.
I mostly write about art, and I write about really existing works which were produced, I don't know, in the 90s and 2000s, which have been producing now, and try to discover them and write about them and reflect on the importance of these artworks in current realities.
Cool. Is there anything that you'd add that you think our listeners might be interested in? Is there something that's coming up that you'd recommend that people would maybe go out and search and look for, or, you know, kind of note as they're flicking through endless stupid reels on, you know, is there something better that they could be looking at? what's up on your agenda?
In the art world?
Yeah, in anything, something that you're interested in, you've seen, you've gone, actually, I'd like more people to take a look at this.
Yes, so basically now in Bukhara in Uzbekistan, which used to be the heart of the Silk Road back in the Middle Ages, in the city at the moment happening Bukhara Biennale. It's the first edition, which is happening in Uzbekistan and in Central Asia overall. And it's a great festival of arts. It's a great exhibition space, installation space. It's a space which brings together about more than 100 artists in one space, and it lasts from September to November, and it's just such a fascinating opportunity to artists and to many people find out about Central Asian art. And I would recommend everyone to go on their page and to read about it, because in the art world, it's a breakthrough in the art world, especially in the Central Asian art sphere.
T, what about you? Anything that you'd recommend people to look at or search out at the moment?
I think it depends on which particular demographic of people, but I think people in general who may be not involved in arts and culture in any way, I'd probably say definitely get involved in it, because it would bring a lot of joy into your life. But just finding creativity in the small things like cleaning and cooking, and finding creativity in the mundane outside of like a grand project or big event as well, I think is really, really important. Because what I often find is, now that I'm running this really interesting project, everything else feels so dull and so tame. When I'm not on the project, everything just feels a bit boring, which can make life feel a bit depressing. I think that's as an artist, we go through that cycle of excitement and high when we're doing something creative, and then we feel a bit low when we're just doing normal things. So I think there's a beauty in trying to find fun and creativity and spontaneity in like the laundry and cooking, and how do you find that? And I think that's probably something that we can all try and work on.
Definitely.
Wonderful. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Speak to you again soon.